Good morning. Welcome to Jump in Tucson. I am your host, Ted Maxwell, and Matt Neely's behind the glass working the boards and, as always, keeping me on time and target. He's going to need a little help because I just finished a big conversation with Bruce Ash and Christy Simone as they were walking out from Wake Up Tucson this morning. So I'm a little off track. Do we have our guest on the phone today?
He is.
Well, I told Chuck that I was going to go down on a rant, but first thing, let's bring him on the phone. Chuck, do I have you loud and clear?
Ted, I'm here. I'm joining you in live spirit.
Well, today, is a pretty busy day. I was going to tell Matt it was really tough because you do know what today is, don't you?
It does happen to be the small turnout primary election day in Arizona.
No, it's the day after my wife's birthday, and it's the day that the women's gymnastic team is going to go out and try to capture a gold medal. And if anybody, there's one thing I want, if you have not seen just the short clips of the emotion of the men's team winning a bronze yesterday for the gymnastics, the patriotism, the joy, the teamwork, it's what I get concerned of in this time of our lives when we're running into elections and primaries and battles and everybody's fighting it. But I wish I could just live in that joy forever, but we're not, because it is the incredibly low turnout primary. So my guest today is going to be Chuck Coughlin. If you don't know Chuck, as when I go through his resume, he's done a lot of different things, but they all tended to lead back to politics. 27 years ago was probably one of the biggest days in his life when he founded the High Ground. He's the CEO and president, and when he was founded High Ground up in the Maricopa area, it was a consulting firm specializing in campaign management. Today, the firm has a palette of public affairs professionals working on things from lobbying to communications, public opinion, digital marketing, and campaign management. We're going to get into the campaign management a little bit more. But Chuck, one of the things we do on this show, it's called the Engagement Hour, because we want to get people involved. And so I always like to kind of dig deep at the story of what got people involved in service. And sometimes it's military service, first responders, healthcare, educators, elected officials, and there's a whole world of service behind those folks that make our policy and get elected and run campaigns. So what was it growing up that led you to what you do today and have done for so long and done so well?
Well, thanks, Ted. It's a pleasure to be with you this morning and all your listeners. It's the dinner table conversation every night. My father was a corporate labor relations lawyer in Detroit, Michigan, from the 60s through the late 80s. He was working on behalf of corporate clients who were fighting union organization. And the dinner table conversation every night was about whatever negotiation he was engaged in. And my mother was a Republican, native Ann Arborite, which is weird because Republicans generally don't populate Ann Arbor politics. And she had strong opinions. And so we had great dinner table conversations. And it occurred to me when I was a kid that there's a whole world of things going on around you that can affect the way you live, how you grow up, what happens, your future. And I always thought it would be great to be a part of that. Went to school in Ohio, to Denison University, did tons of internships in D.C. and, migrated my way towards campaigns. I've been there ever since I graduated from college in 84. And I have just been incredibly blessed to have a team of people that are working with me now and people and clients that I've worked for in my life that I can be truly proud of to say that I represented and helped these people in these issues and these causes. And I've just been blessed, Ted. It's an unbelievable existence and living, and I thank the good Lord for it.
Well, there's no doubt that I know you're passionate about what you do. I know you enjoy it. It's led to having a good quality of life, because High Ground has been recognized so many times through Capital Times Awards, through campaigns and election recognition, and with everything from best public relations firms, best lobbying firm. You have a great reputation, and you've been involved for over 27 years in this consulting firm. But you grew up in Michigan. You went to college in Ohio. And I know your first campaign afterwards, but what brought you to Arizona?
So in that first campaign in Ohio, I was very blessed to meet a congressman from Arizona, the then second term in the U.S. Congress, John McCain. He flew out to campaign for our candidate, and I escorted him around Cleveland, Ohio. And I drove him around, and I'll never forget I took him to a VFW hall in Parma, Ohio. It's a tough part of town. And, you know, you go into this VFW hall, and there was World War I veterans, two veterans, Korea veterans, Vietnam veterans. And, you know, everybody's name had a vowel at the end of their name. It was a working class part of the community. You know, this is John in 84. Not a lot of people knew him. And so I passed out the literature, you know, about, you know, the Crown Prince, the POW, and I put it on everybody's chair. And, you know, he comes walking in, and these guys are looking, you know, who the heck is this guy? And he gets up there and he, you know, greets all the veterans, thanks them for their service. And then he asks if there's any Marines in the room, to which he gets a response of hoo-ah from, you know, half a dozen guys or so. And he pauses, and then he pauses and he says, you know, I feel for all you guys on Father's Day, you know, not really knowing who your dad is. And I mean, the whole place went completely dark, silent. And he's looking around and I'm looking around going, oh my, we may never get out of here. This may be my first and last campaign event. And he all of a sudden, as he often did, started chuckling at his own joke. And then the whole room burst out in laughter. And I just thought it took amazing courage to do that, and familiarity with his audience. And then he went on to tell, you know, the story of his captivity in Hanoi, and how he, you know, stayed and was offered release and declined it and was tortured and, you know, went through with his fellow POWs, you know, a 7-year period of hell. And I said, well, you know, my first campaign event, I was like, oh, this is the real deal. You know, you run into a lot of candidates later in life and you're like, okay. But, you know, right out of the box to meet the real deal, I was just totally impressed. And I asked if I could come work on his Senate campaign. That was the year that he was thinking about running. Goldwater was retiring and he was going to run for the U.S. Senate for Goldwater's seat. And I thought it'd be a great opportunity to come out and help and learn about Arizona and learn, you know, how to run a campaign and what role I could play. And it was fantastic. And it was a great opportunity for a young guy to have. And they gave me that opportunity and I got out here and I never went home. I just love the opportunity. I've had this conversation subsequently with like Michael Crow and others who similarly have migrated here. And I said, you know, I came here and it was like so crazy that you could see so far into the horizon, because the flat landscape surrounded the valley and you have these mountains that surround you, but you can see forever. And it gives a young guy the impression that anything's possible. And in Arizona, I still believe that's true, because we don't have, you know, you from back east, you get hierarchical structures of society and culture and all that stuff. What I loved about Arizona was the flat relational landscape. You know, I could talk to Barry Goldwater. I could talk to John Rhodes. I could talk to John McCain. I could, you know, meet governors. I could meet senators. They're like everybody else. You know, they're putting their pantyhose on one leg at a time, or they're putting their pants on one leg at a time. And everybody was very relatable, and I've always admired that about Arizona, just the flat landscape and respect everybody has for one another. And, you know, I was like, this would be a great place to live, and it has been.
Well, I'm glad you did make that decision. I really appreciate you sharing the story about Senator McCain. He, to me, was a true statesman, a true leader, and he demonstrated that no more than all the time in Vietnam. And a lot of people forget that, and you can never forget that. Great introduction, Chuck. I found so many of the folks that I brought on this show, it was something in their family that led them to do what they did later in life, and so I appreciate you sharing that with us. We're going to take a break right now, and when we come back, that's Chuck Coughlin with High Ground Public Affairs, and make sure you've changed the name a couple of times, so you'll have to correct me if I'm wrong on that one. But when we come back, we'll talk about the primary elections today, why they are shaping up the way they are, the turnout, and then we'll get in later in the show into what are some of the options with how we elect people in the primaries. You're listening to Jump in Tucson on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Welcome back. You're listening to Ted Maxwell and Chuck Coughlin talk about the primary election day on Jump in Tucson, the engagement hour. Chuck, we're going to kind of go into this time and talk about what this primary currently is looking like, because systems matter. You hear that a lot, and it changes what the results and who you get and who's out there. And let's talk first. You talked about low voter turnout in this primary. 2 weeks ago, when my director of government affairs, Nicole Barraza, pulled how many of the early ballots had been returned in Pima County, it was only 16%. And I read something yesterday, Maricopa's apparently up to about 35 to 40%, but they only expect about 30% of all the folks who can vote that are registered voters will vote in the primary. Why are those numbers, and what are you seeing this year?
Well, and I think it's important for your listeners to understand what that means. And I think that's true. But it's really broken down into two different categories. You have Republicans turning out in Republican-only primaries, so only events where you can elect a Republican. And then you have Democrats turning out in Democratic primaries that can only vote a Democratic for a Democratic candidate. And independents can participate, but when they do, they're requested to vote a straight ticket. So if you can request a Republican or a Democratic ballot. But what that means is that only 15% of voters, of Democratic voters, are making 100% of the decisions for all of the Democrats, and about 20% of Republican voters are making all of the decisions for the Republican. The two of those together come out about 30 and 35% of the electorate. But it's not really a true test, because it's not a contest, an open contest to compete against each other. And what you just said is turnout is down this year. In Maricopa County, there's about, tracking-wise, as of yesterday, there's about 200,000 fewer ballots had been returned. Speculation is that we moved our primary date up. We moved it up into July. And I think it caught a lot of people by surprise, because usually, it's the second week of August or the first week of August, or, it's historically been later. And they moved it up, and I think it caught a lot of people by surprise. And, I've seen people running around with ballots, and I'm like, what are you doing? And they're like, well, I'm going to go drop it off at the drop box now. And I'm like, you had all this time. And so, I think the date moving has caught some people by surprise, and I pretty much attribute that to the decline in turnout right now.
Well, I'm glad to hear you say that. To me, you're giving more credit to people on having timing and timeline. Normally, I expect when things start showing up in the mail, then you start realizing that an election's coming up. So I do think that is one of the challenges. You always hear about independents can vote in the primaries, because they can request a ballot and pull it, and it falls upon them. I know your organization, on behalf I think SLC was part of the funding to contributed to it, did a polling of independent and party not declared. And what I recall that surprised me the most is you always hear as all the independents saying, yes, I'm going to pull a ballot, 30% of them might pull the ballot. But the fact of the matter is people will tell you they pull a ballot. And then what your polling showed is they didn't, or they didn't even know.
Right. It's always about 8 to maybe 10, but consistently around 8% of independent voters do participate in a primary. And that's just a shocking drop off. And I do believe, you know, based on anecdotal evidence, when I'm out talking to people and when you meet people in general, lots of independents are not aware that they can participate in a primary. So they just ignore it, thinking, well, I'll participate in November, and which many more of them do. In November, we anticipate about 28% of independents will participate in this fall's general election. But they missed the decision to participate in this. I think a lot of people also just don't like the choice. I'm not a Democrat, and I'm not a Republican, so why am I going to pick one ballot or the other? Just put them all on the same ballot and let me vote.
Yeah, I've heard from quite a few independents that say, why can't I vote for, understanding right. They can only vote either D or R, but they'd like to vote D in this race, R in that race, D in that race. And,
yeah.
And I think that would create some problems. But you mentioned a point of, you know, why even bother voting in the primaries? I'm going to throw some stats at you. This is something we've got people... I can ask the listeners just to take this in for a second and then say, is this system working for you? So 30 seats in the Arizona State Legislature, 16 of them, so 16 of the 30 districts do not have a primary for the Senate. 12 of the 30 districts do not have a primary for the State House. And of those six in the Senate, or of those 16 in the Senate, six of them don't even have a general. There's no general. So, and everybody goes, oh, those must be, you know, that's a fault of redistricting. And yes, that creates some of it when we've got really unbalanced districts. But realize there's two of those districts are Republican and four are Democrat. And in one district, LD20, which is a Southern Arizona district, there's no challengers in the primary for either the Senate or the House. And there's no Republicans running. So those three individuals have already effectively been elected without a single vote being cast.
Right. I call our current system, Ted, the Incumbent Protection Act, because it's designed for incumbents to be successful, as you said, and to diminish competition. By the way we conduct our elections in partisan-only primaries and narrow, you know, focused primaries, what the net effect of that is, based upon who turns out in those primaries, it's high primary partisan voters. It's not a good flavor of what the entire electorate thinks. And as you said, of all those districts, you know, there's only four or five swing districts in the state. All the rest are determined in the primary by virtue of the way they've been drawn. And so the question we've continued to raise, and Southern Arizona leadership's been a part of this discussion for over the past 2 years, and we're finally trying to do something about it, is what happened to competition? What happened to the open market principles that made America what it is today, that democratic capitalism that says an open market serves its customers the best? Why not just create that democratic capitalism and use those same principles that made our economy as strong as it is today within this political system to create competition, attract new people to run, and create an atmosphere where ideas are encouraged, where discussion and debate is encouraged, where it doesn't matter if you're a Republican or a Democrat or an independent. Get in the game, have the same signature requirements today, for instance, and I don't think a lot of people know this, it's in order for an independent to run, you have to collect six times as many signatures to be on the ballot. And then you're not on the primary ballot. You're only on the general election ballot. So it's like starting a race, you know, 50 yards, 100 yard race, 50 yards behind your opponents because their campaigns are already going. No. And you're left at the starting line. And so it's just fundamentally unfair. It's dictated by partisan preference, by those two parties who want to control the access to the ballot for their own benefit And now, you know, shocking what we see today is what, you know, John Adams feared the most when he said, you know, my greatest fear about our democracy is that we just evolve into this two-party system where the only goal is one party to defeat the other party. Unfortunately, that's where we are today. And nobody thinks, as back to my beginning conversation with you, John McCain, one of the reasons I was a big John McCain supporter is because he was always a country first guy. I don't care, you know, what about my party. I care about my country.
No, absolutely. We are coming up on a hard break, and I need Matt Neely to continue to roll the Springsteen music because this can kind of get you down in some cases. When we get back, we'll talk and dig a little deeper on how our election systems work. You're listening to Chuck Coughlin from High Ground, Inc., and I'm Ted Maxwell, your host on Jumpin' Tucson on 1030 The Voice, local news and talk. See you after the break. Welcome back. You're listening to Jump in Tucson, the Engagement Hour. I'm your host, Ted Maxwell, and with me today is Chuck Coughlin, the CEO and president of High Ground, Inc., a long-time political consultant, campaign organizer, and an advocate for what he believes will make this state a better place. So, Chuck, again, thanks for joining us today.
My pleasure, Ted. Thank you for the opportunity.
Absolutely. Great conversation thus far. As you can tell, we both can talk politics all day. But the purpose of today's conversation is, one, is to try to get you engaged. I talk about the rights and responsibilities that we have as citizens of this great country quite often. And the most basic one is to vote. And as I've always said, don't just vote. Make sure you are an informed voter. It's going to be really difficult this fall. The ballots are going to be long with a lot of different things on it. But it is your right and your responsibility to have your say on who your elected leaders are. And that's why I think both Chuck and I will argue about, is our system creating the options we have to actually select our elected leaders? We talked a lot earlier, Chuck, about the state. I want a really quick run over some local ones. We're encouraging you to get to a polling place today and vote. There's some critical, whether you're a Democrat or Republican, and if you're an independent, you've already pulled that ballot. You can't show up and just ask for one. You already had to have requested to pull one. You need to go there. If you're a Democrat, the Pima County Attorney's race will be decided today. Laura Conover or Mike Jetty. It's been a fairly, fairly heated and vocal campaign. Don't miss your opportunity to have your say. Additionally, three of the five County Board of Supervisor races have primaries. On the Democratic side, you have a challenger to Rex Scott in District 1, and you also have what I would call a full field. We don't see this very often, but we have four candidates running for Sharon Bronson's open seat on the Democrat side. So that's your opportunity to go select your candidate. But have no fear, the Republicans also have a Board of Supervisor primary in District 2. So get out and take that vote. And on the Republican side also, I'd like to remind you, we've talked a lot about the districts that are safe. LD-17's been a competitive district since its existence right now, even though it would tell you it's not. There's an important primary going on in there, both for the state Senate and the state House. So you've got reasons to get out and vote. So, Chuck, do you want to have any encouragement to folks to go out there and vote today?
Absolutely. I mean, people have to understand how important these races are. As we've discussed, many of them determine who the winner is going to be. That if you win a primary in 80% of legislative or congressional races in Arizona, you're done. You're in. You're elected. So you're not going to have a competitive primary. And so this is where the rubber hits the road, and people need to participate. They need to go and participate and look at the candidates, look at their choices. I don't care if you fill out the whole ballot or not. Just go vote for one or two or three candidates that you want to vote for. We were talking earlier. I didn't fill out my whole Republican ballot here in Maricopa County because I didn't like a bunch of my choices. But I did vote for, you know, six or seven Republican candidates that I felt were worthy of that vote. And that's what matters. You got to vote.
Absolutely. And I totally agree. Don't force yourself to fill out the whole ballot. If you don't know what a race is, leave it blank. If you don't know the candidates or don't understand the differences between them, leave it blank. If you don't understand what truly an initiative is going to be or a referral on the propositions of the ballot, it's okay to leave them blank. I think a lot of people leave the judges section blank because it's so long, and there's this year you're going to have the opportunity to vote to see if you still want that. But the bottom line is you've got to vote. So, Chuck, at this point, I want to go ahead and pull the Band-Aid off, and let's start talking about something else that's going to be, hopefully, on the ballot this fall. And there's a lot of controversy around it because some people think our system's good as it is today, and some think the problem is the parties. And if we just fix them, then maybe the system will work. And some think it's a system because there's inequities in the current system. 34%, roughly, and you can correct me, you probably know these numbers in more detail, but about 34% of our state population now is independent, somewhere between 32 and 34. And that's a large, significant. We already talked about how they don't play in the primaries at all. So Make Elections Fair is about just that, trying to change things from the view of those folks that put this on the ballot, collected over almost 500,000 signatures, I believe. You helped with that campaign. So do you want to talk just as basic premise, what are the key things about the Make Elections Fair proposition that will be on the ballot this fall?
Yeah, the narrative that runs the entire thing together, Ted, is all voters and all candidates should be treated the same. So we change a number of things, but that's the principle, that you hold on to the idea that every candidate and every voter should be treated identically. Nobody should be given a head start or put behind the start line in any race, that every voter is treated the same. Like our Constitution says, all men are created equal. This follows that constitutional principle upheld by the Bill of Rights that says individuals matter. And what we say in this initiative is anybody can qualify to run. They qualify the same number of signatures that anybody else collects for any given office, and that your name goes on the ballot. And then you vote. And then you vote for those candidates. They all compete together. And you vote for your favorite candidate. And that's the idea. It's called an open primary. It's called Prop 140. It will be Prop 140 on this November's ballot that Make Elections Fair is about, treating every voter identically, treating every candidate identically. And we believe that whole system where the two parties control, have their mitts on our necks or their chains around our voting hands, and we just want to throw off those shackles and let anybody vote for whomever they want. You can sign anybody's petition that you want to sign. Right now, you can only sign a petition of the party that you're a member of. So we want to create just an open, back to what I was saying earlier, an open democratic process that is based on the capitalism that drives the American economy. Create an open market, let anybody vote for whomever they want.
So there's a couple pieces to that when we talk about treating everybody fair in getting on the ballot. And one is what you mentioned is equal number of signatures for every ballot, for every candidate. So whether you're Republican, a Democrat, independent, green, libertarian, everybody's got to make the same. So the interesting piece to me is then everybody runs in one race. So are there any limitations to the number of Republicans or Democrats or independents that can be on that ballot?
No, we're going to have a bigger ballot. You're going to have more people, back to the free principle of the free economy. We will, for a period of time, have, when we pass, we'll have more candidates and more selections. But the marketplace will determine who will win then. If you can run a good campaign, if you can raise money, if you can appeal to constituencies, you know, the problem today is most candidates, when they're running in today's system, only appeal to the most liberal, progressive Democrats in a Democratic primary, or the most MAGA MAGA Republicans in a Republican primary. Where's everybody else? So, you know, when somebody comes to my, and this is the reason I'm doing it. So people come into my office you could come in and say, hey, I want to run for office. And I would say, okay, tell me what you believe. And if you tell me, if you're a Republican and you tell me you do not believe the 20 and 22 elections were stolen, as a starting point, I'm going to say, well, you're probably not going to win a Republican primary because the majority of Republican primary voters believe that. incorrectly, but they do believe that. On the Democratic side, you would say to me, you know, I'm really uncomfortable with the more than two gender thing. You know, the good book says there's two genders. And I will say, well, if you make that an issue in your Democratic primary, you're not going to win, because that's a gospel belief now on the most progressive part of the Democratic Party. So what I say when you come in to see me now, then I answer those questions. I say, you can't run. And most people come, and it's really disappointing to me, because really good people come in and say, I want to run. And I say, no, you can't. And so I am just forced into the idea of, okay, rather than me telling you what you can and can't do based on voter turnout, why don't you tell me what you believe? We'll go do a survey, figure out of all of the voters in your district, Republican, Democrat, Independent, other, what they believe. Let's find out who your voters are, and then turn those people out for you, because that's a real campaign. That's an actual campaign where you're talking to voters who are your voters, who you believe and you want to bond with and you can turn out. That's a free, fair market campaign that will change America if we do this. If we were able to execute it correctly, that we'll have a campaign that appeals to most voters. And I believe that will spike turnout, that will create higher turnout in a primary election. It'll create more competition and better ideas. You know, there's great ideas out there. I mean, let's have those debates about those two issues. Was the election stolen, or are there more than two genders? And let's have that debate in public. I'm not saying we should discriminate against those people, but let's have a debate about that. Let's talk about that. And let's have the results of that play out with a majority of the electorate who no longer has an obstacle to participate in an election. Because today, it's only going to be Republicans and 8% of independents, and it's only going to be Democrats and maybe 7% of independents that participate. So let's just have an open market debate about ideas. I think that will make for better candidates, better elections, and a better Arizona.
And based on an open primary system, then, all Republicans, registered Republican voters, all registered Democratic voters, and all registered independents and others would all receive their early ballots if they're so signed up. They would all have the ability to walk on Election Day, and effectively even though we know the primary will never be as big as the generals, every registered voter in the state of Arizona would have the opportunity to vote and participate in our primary system.
Yeah, and yeah, that's exactly right, because here's the other irony of ironies on this thing. I'm an independent, unaffiliated voter now, and my taxpayer dollars are paying for a partisan-controlled primary. What's that I can't run in? I can't run in that election. What sense does that make, that I am prohibited from running in a publicly financed election because I'm not a member of that party? Well, who says that we have a constitutional obligation to fund a partisan primary? It's not in the Constitution. You know, George Washington wasn't a member of a party. These things have been changed over years. The Constitution gives every state the right to create its own election system. Well, let's use that. Let's use that to, you know, make America great again. Let's use the market system to do that.
And that's Chuck Coughlin, the president and CEO of High Ground Inc., and one of the proponents of the Make Elections Fair proposition that will be appearing on the ballot. We're going to take a quick break here, and Chuck, when we get back, we'll have about 6.5-7 minutes. Let's talk about some of the challenges that you're facing in getting this to the ballot, and what some of the confusion are, on some of the other folks out there that want to talk about the general election and not this impact on the primary. So you're listening to 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Jump in Tucson, the engagement hour. I'm Ted Maxwell, your host, and Matt Neely, thank you for keeping the Springsteen coming. I told him it was going to be a day I was going to need to hear some of that. So I've got Chuck Coughlin, the CEO and president of High Ground Inc. with me. I encourage you tomorrow to tune in to Jump in Tucson with Grant Kruger. It will probably tell you something if he's got a food topic tomorrow going on. That means he wants to avoid talking about the elections. But I've got a sense you're going to hear some politics tomorrow as well with Grant's on his show. So please tune in after Wake Up Tucson tomorrow. It should be an interesting day of assessing what happens today. So, Chuck, we've kind of laid it out. Having worked with the folks that are behind Make Elections Fair, because many of them, there are several of them, not many, but several from SALC, several from efforts. You've obviously run a campaign previously to try to fix what we, I think there are people out there that will call the primary problem. But that's not what's getting attention right now. There's just been a recent lawsuit filed by both the Free Enterprise Club, which is more of a conservative Republican organization, as well as by three individual Democrats as a whole taking part in a lawsuit. Because nobody wants to talk about the primary problem. They want to focus what they think is going to happen with the general election. So can you kind of tell us how, what that step of Make Elections Fair is? What, who gets to decide how the general's conducted?
Yeah. So the lawsuits that have been filed are on the single subject clause in the Constitution that says that there will only be one single subject. And they cite all the various provisions in our initiative. And, you know, how do these relate to themselves? Well, the easy answer to that, the reason we'll prevail on that in court, is that it's all related to the principle I talked about. Every voter gets treated the same. Every candidate gets treated the same. That's the premise. That's why we have to change so many things in the primary. And that's why all those provisions are there. Then there's the additional objections, particularly made in the Free Enterprise lawsuit, that we somehow create a general election cycle that requires a ranked choice ballot. So what we do, which is not true, because we are singularly focused on fixing the primary. And what we do, once we fix the primary, we simply tell the legislature and the governor in Prop 140 that they will come up with a new general election format, which would be either they could move up to five candidates, so the five top vote getters from the primary, they could move up to five forward to the general election, or they could move up to two, so it would be just the top two vote getters in the primary that would move forward to the general election. And then they would decide if it's three or more, we require them to rank the ballot. And the reason we do that is because the goal of our initiative is to make sure that whoever gets elected is elected by a majority of the electorate. We want to make sure that that candidate actually represents a majority of the electorate. And so in a ranked ballot, we will determine a majority election. And that is confusing to people. That's why we didn't want to require that, because we think that's a big decision. We think just getting rid of the primary system is a big decision, because we want to jettison the partisan primary. But we want election professionals, county recorders, the Secretary of State, citizens all to be involved in the process of deciding how to run the general election. We didn't want to put that in the Constitution and freeze it forever in the Constitution. We thought it was a good idea to create that opportunity for the legislature and the governor to come up with a solution. And then we say in there, if the legislature and the governor fails to come up with a solution, that the Secretary of State shall do it. And there's a lot of misinformation out there saying, oh, we just give all the authority to the Secretary of State. No, he's there as a backstop if that process doesn't work by November 1, 2025. And so we're not really concerned. I'm agnostic. I mean, the founder, the principal leaders of open primaries are agnostic as to how the general election should be run, because we are focused exclusively on the primary because we want to fix the primary. Whatever happens in the general will be better than what we have today, because today 80% of, you know, as you started off this program, you just said all these people who don't have any opposition, either in a primary in many instances or in a general. And we want to change that. We want to make sure everybody has competition, that we lower all those barriers to participate. We lower all those barriers to, you know, prevent people from voting. And we said, hey, anybody can vote. Any candidate can vote. Anybody can run. You can do whatever you want. It's freedom. It's about freedom. And we believe that that will improve the entire, whatever ends up coming as a result of that will be dramatically better than what we have today.
And I think that's one of the challenges that this campaign's going to face throughout, because those folks, the folks, and quite often both parties tend to be against this idea, I guess would dilute their power a little bit, dilute their control. We've seen in the state legislature where the races are decided by the parties before it even gets to the primary. In all, yep. Over half of the state legislative districts are decided who the candidates are before anybody gets. So there is no primary. We've already identified that. So they're going to want to focus on that general election side of it. As a matter of fact, right. I believe the ballot language or the pamphlet language came out, and the first line was ranked choice voting. And that's not what this is. I understand that's not what this is about.
We're going to fix that. We're going to win that lawsuit against legislative council and reorder that discussion. We're not saying don't put it in there. You can put it in its position over things that may happen, but not will happen. There's a number of things that we require to happen, but your point, Ted, is well taken. We are fighting the institutional authorities that run Arizona elections today. That's the two parties. There is no question in my mind, and all I'd ask your listeners to think about when they think about Prop 140 is, are you happy with the way this is working today? Is this really the way that we should be running our primary election system? And if you say no, then just change it. I mean, just vote for a change. And I believe whatever happens is going to be better than what we have today, because it's clearly not working today.
Well, Chuck, I appreciate you joining me today. We'll have plenty of more time to talk on this as we get more towards the actual general election. Enjoy primary day, and I know you voted, so thank you for that.
Thank you, Ted. Thanks for the time, and thanks to all your listeners for participating in democracy.
Absolutely. Thank you, everybody, for joining us today on Jump in Tucson, 1030 The Voice. Have a great week.